resources for Thursday, May 31st, 2007. I will open a work session on House Bill 3540 relating to compensation for loss of value of private real property resulting from land use regulation. Senator Prezansky, Mr. Shetterly, Mr. Whitman, would you all please come forward? We might need an extra chair. As the committee probably remembers, we dealt with this bill a number of weeks ago. I'm going to ask Mr. Whitman and Senator Prezansky to go through the Dash 31 changes to the bill, and then we'll have time for questions, and then it's the chair's intent to go into a work session. Senator Prezansky, why don't you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Before you today is House Bill 3540B with a Dash 31 amendment. What we are asking the committee to do is to adopt the amendments. 3540B has been in possession of Ways and Means since its passage from the outside. And as we stated, or as I stated on the record in the Land Use Fairness Committee, the purpose of moving the bill at the time was to get it through the first process, then get it to the point of where it be in Ways and Means, allow for a time to continue to reflect and negotiate any other changes that would be necessary or appropriate for that measure. I want to point out to you that the framework that has been part of Measure 3540 is still intact. What you have before you and what we distributed yesterday, and we came back with a little more updated version, is a review of 13 parts that we are seeking through the Dash 31 amendments to include and incorporate. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure at what level you want me to go into these various changes that we are proposing through the 31s. As I reflected, I believe the amendments were distributed to members through LFO late yesterday. I know that they came out of LC. I think we got the final 31s right before 5 p.m. So I'm not sure what members would like to do, and so we can go in greater detail, whatever you want.
Okay. I think it might be beneficial if either you or Mr. Whitman could walk them through the amendments to give them. We can take about 15 to 20 minutes and just basically give us an idea of what the intent of the amendments are.
In that case, I'm going to let Mr. Rick Whitman, who's with the Department of Justice, who's been working with us on the drafting of the legalese, to actually walk you through those. And if you have any questions for any of us, we will do our best to respond to these.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Richard Whitman with the Oregon Department of Justice. As Senator Prezansky explained, there are 13 areas of change that result from the Dash 31 amendments, and I'm going to walk you through each of those 13 areas. And if you want me to go into more or less detail as I go through this, please signal me and I'll adjust accordingly. I probably should start out, though, since it's been a little while, by giving you just a couple minutes refresher on the overall framework for House Bill 3540, which has not changed as a result of these amendments. And so House Bill 3540 addresses 2004 Oregon ballot measure 37, and it basically divides the world into what is done with approved and pending Measure 37 claims, which is the first 11 sections of House Bill 3540, and then sections 12 through, I believe it's 22, address Measure 37 going forward. For approved and pending claims, they are essentially divided into two subgroups. One is approved and pending claims that are for property outside of an urban growth boundary, and then the second category is for property inside of an urban growth boundary. For the outside of the urban growth boundary category, which is most of the Measure 37 claims that have been received by government, the 7,000 or so claims that are in the door, those are those folks are, if they have an approved or pending claim, are given several options. They can, through the so-called commonly known as the express lane provision, which is Section 6 of the bill, obtain 1-3 home sites if they had that right when they acquired the property. Under the commonly known conditional path, which is Section 7 of the bill, they can go for 4-10 home sites, again, if they had that right when they acquired the property, and if they can demonstrate an actual reduction in fair market value. And then their third option, which is true for everybody who has a claim in the door, if they actually have a vested right to carry out the development that's authorized by their Measure 37 claim, they can proceed with those vested rights under what they have with Measure 37 now. So that's the basic part of 3540 that deals with claims, the 7,000 or so claims that are already in the door. The second half of Measure 37 deals with, I'm sorry, the second half of House Bill 3540 deals with Measure 37 going forward and sets up procedures and a structure for the bill going forward. So that basic framework is not altered at all by the amendments, the Dash 31 amendments that you have before you. Let me now run you through each of those 13 areas of change. The first one, and you've all been given a handout which summarizes the changes and where they appear in the bill. So the first policy decision that was made by the authors of the bill was to put claims that are made based on land use regulations enacted by Metro back into the bill, both with regard to approved and pending claims and with regard to Measure 37 going forward. There are about 25 claims that have been made to Metro so far under Measure 37. There could be Metro land use regulations in the future. These amendments would ensure that Metro is back in the bill and land use regulations adopted by Metro could be the basis for a Measure 37 claim. So that's the first one. The second change has to do with the prospective part, the second half of House Bill 3540, which deals with Measure 37 going forward, new claims that are made. House Bill 3540, as it passed the House, had a dual threshold in there for a showing in terms of reduction in value. You had to show at least a 10% reduction in value from a land use regulation, or if you had been nickeled and dimed through multiple land use regulations, then there was a 25% threshold if the claim was based on multiple land use regulations. Those are gone. They're out of the bill. But there is also a change in the bill, again, on the going forward part, so that the relief that is provided, if government elects not to pay compensation, but instead to waive land use regulations, to not apply them to the use of the property, the wording was changed so that the waiver is only to the extent necessary to offset the reduction in value. So if you have a land use regulation that is enacted that reduces the value of the property by 10%, to use the number that used to be in the threshold, this would require a waiver, but only to the extent necessary to make up for that loss in value. So that's the second area of change in the bill. Then the third area of change has to do with the cutoff date between these two halves of the bill. The House Bill 3540, as passed by the House, would have had a May 15th date is a deadline for claims based on existing land use regulations. And if you were going to make a claim based, make a claim after that date, it could only be for the effect of a new land use regulation. This amendment, third amendment, would move that from May 15 to sine die, whatever that date is. The fourth change is, again, with regard to the prospective part of the bill for new claims. We had, in the drafting of 3540, if a claim was made against, a new claim was made against the state, the authorization was for, in terms of relief, was to provide a waiver. This amendment, the fourth amendment, again, a policy decision was made that we should provide for the alternative of compensation. If the state does want to provide compensation instead of a waiver, this bill makes sure that that authority is there. This amendment.
Mr. Chair, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, just go back to number three for a second, if I may. There is one other thing made that's worth pointing out, and that is a January 1, 2007 date for prospective claims. House Bill 3540 as drafted would have inadvertently have created a period of time between May 15 and the effective date of the bill, if it's passed by the voters, during which you could not have filed a claim either retroactively or prospectively. This bill moves that date for prospective claims back to January 1, 2007, so it avoids that interruption between retroactive and prospective claims.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shetterly. Okay, number five, there's a provision. Relief under Measure 37 is dependent on when you acquired the property. The basic concept, one of the basic concepts behind Measure 37 is the right to do what you could have done when you acquired the property. We have a, we've seen a situations evolve as we've reviewed the 7,000 or so claims that have been made to the state, where in many cases we have a couple where the one spouse will have owned the property before the marriage. Couple's married, and then the spouse passes away, the property goes to the surviving spouse. Well, under Measure 37, because everything's tied to the date of acquisition of the property, that surviving spouse basically is out of luck and will have an acquisition date as of the date of the death of his or her spouse. There's a fix in 3540 for that, but it was drafted quite narrowly, and so again, a policy choice was made to broaden that somewhat to make sure that it includes situations where, as I described, one of the spouses acquired the property and then they were married. And then there was a transfer to, a partial transfer of the property to the spouse during the marriage. This would make sure that we would pick up that situation, which is actually quite commonly found in claims, in order to give the surviving spouse the same acquisition date as their spouse. That's the amendment. Number six, we had in 3540, the bill was drafted so that the definition of land use regulation did not include statutes that regulate farming and forest practices. It only included administrative rules. And I think the thinking behind that was the legislature can always decide whether or not to subject new statutes to Measure 37 claims or not. A policy decision was made to put statutes back in. That means that when this body or your successors decide to enact new legislation that fits within a land use regulation, there will need to be a conscious thought about whether or not to exempt that legislation from the provisions of Measure 37 or not. So that's what this amendment does. Number seven, again, with regard to farm and forest practices, there was a concern that there's an exemption in Measure 37 for land use regulations that were enacted to protect public health and safety. And the way that's defined in Measure 37 is quite ambiguous, and some are concerned that it could be interpreted to be quite a broad exemption that would exempt a very large range of regulations. So rather than use that term, this amendment would tie that exemption to human health and safety rather than public health and safety, which is essentially intended to, again, a policy choice to ensure that that exemption is not interpreted so broadly that it creates a real burden on either farm practices or forest practices, really in parallel with the other provisions of the bill that protect those industries, if you will, from significant residential development.
Senator Avakian has a question.
Yes.
And actually, looping back to six.
Yes.
Were you suggesting that as we draft statutes in the future, that we might need to specifically include language in those statutes exempting it or including it related to Measure 37 claims?
Chair Devlin, Senator Avakian, that's correct. If the bill that you are working on falls within the definition in 3540 of a land use regulation, then there will need to be a conscious choice. Well, if you don't make a choice, then if you don't say anything, then that statute could trigger additional Measure 37 claims. So if you want to exempt it from Measure 37, you have the power to do that, but you will need to do it expressly. That's correct. Okay. The next area of change, number 8, clarification and cleanup. This is just a grouping together of a number of technical changes in the bill, and there are a fair number of technical changes.
One more question. This is, I know it seems like an incredibly important point with regard to drafting legislation. Is what you're implying then also that if the legislature, because of this precedent, if the legislature were to fail to expressly provide the exemption, it would be likely a showing of legislative intent that it is to apply?
Right. Chair Devlin, Senator Avakian, I don't know that that would be the case, but I think the definition of land use regulation in 3540 is now drafted in a way that it's I don't know what other word to use than say it's fairly tight. So if you amend a statute that falls within that fairly tight definition of land use regulation, then and without saying anything, I think a court would be likely to say that it could trigger additional Measure 37 claims. The discussion will then be whether it falls under one of the exemptions in the bill or not, which it may or may not.
All right. Let me also, I guess, try to pull that together. I mean, we, through this legislation, just like any other statutory legislation, cannot preempt a future legislature from going down and changing those statutes. And so one of the issues that we had here was how do you express that statutes that do impact land use regulations are going to include it? And that's what you have before you. Clearly, the only way that you could ever prohibit statutes in the future from impacting land use regulations would be send something to the voters and put in the Constitution. And, you know, and that's not, you know, what this does, of course. And so the only means of showing the intent that we have currently as a legislature is to show that we expect and through this amendment would include future statutes to be included if it does in fact impact in the land use regulations area. But if the body chose to override that for whatever reasons, then they can do that, but it's going to have to be expressed.
I'm not suggesting a different course, but it seems to me that this this creates a significant burden or need for attention from legislative counsel's office on everything they do, which
I think will probably require maybe some additional training for the lawyers down there on how to spot these kinds of issues.
Chair Devlin, Senator Avakian, one thing that's really important to point out here is this is not a change from where we are now. This is where we are now under Measure 37. We are currently, when we're doing, at least DOJ, and I know Ledge Council also, when we're reviewing bills, we are reviewing in part to see whether there are Measure 37 issues raised by the new legislation. So.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, it's a good point. My experience with having worked with the Legislative Council is that it's very likely that if this is not already, it would be in the drafting manual for Legislative Council, much as Measure 30 impacts, Measure 56 impacts, and others are that they look for when they draft bills. And certainly the agencies will be watching for it, too, in the future.
I just wanted to give a real-world example that I actually think is a positive thing, and I don't know how it would play out in other areas, but we were talking about the Oregon Trail Bill, and it clearly is a land-use decision. It clearly was going to limit an activity someone could otherwise do within a couple hundred-foot swath, and it came up like, well, boy, I think everyone would be able to file Measure 37 claims, so this would basically be an invalid, or this law would apply to no one because everybody owned their property before we passed this thing. And I think it was a good conversation because what it led us to do was say, well, maybe we need to go and look at, you know, conservation easements. I know your name's on the bill. I liked the bill, too. And then I started thinking, I'm like, well, I don't know if it's enforceable, though. And I think it might be a positive thing, actually, that we have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Please proceed. Okay, number 8 on the clarifications and cleanup. We've added back a severability clause. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these unless there's questions. We've added back a severability clause, which is in Measure 37 now. We've clarified definition of high-value forest land. And the last one there is on the appraisals that are required for the conditional path. We've clarified again that it has to be there are several levels of certification for appraisers. It has to be the highest level of training and certification for appraisers for the conditional path.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Richard, how many high-value appraisers do we have in Oregon?
Chair Devlin, Representative Garrard, I don't know the answer to that question. I do know this suggestion came from the Oregon Appraisers Board as what they felt. Actually, the chair of the board. It didn't come from the board officially, who felt that this was the appropriate level of training needed for the sort of appraisal that this legislation requires.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You're going to make it very, very expensive. You're going to cause further backlog and more appraisers, which are already in short supply in the state. You're going to backlog any claims, and why? To appease the appraisers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I guess it's a difference of opinion. The reality, you'll see one of the other changes that we are putting in here, allowing for an offset of $5,000 for processing claims, and clearly if there's a cost involved with an appraisal, which you and I both know there would be, that would be one means of doing that. And whether it's going to backlog, you know, that's, I guess, anyone's perspective. We don't believe that the voters intended to have these type of decisions made by people who weren't qualified to do it.
The ninth area of change has to do with the judicial review provisions in Section 16 of the bill, which provide that decisions of a state agency, mainly DLCD, on Measure 37 claims get reviewed under the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act, which provides for review either in Marion County Circuit Court or the county where a party resides. This changes where the lawsuit gets filed so that it has to get filed in the county where the property is located. It does allow for transfer of the case using normal rules, legal rules, for transfer of venue of cases. But this will, the policy choice here was to essentially give a preference for the, any litigation that occurs to occur in the county where the property is. Number 10, has to do with notice in what happens to in the first half of the bill with approved and pending claims if 3540 is passed out of the legislature and is enacted by the voters. There would be for claims in areas outside of urban growth boundaries, the Department of Land Conservation and Development would send a notice to folks who have approved or pending claims, basically telling them what their options are. DLCD also would send notice to claimants who had been denied, but who actually qualify under some of the amended provisions, mainly the surviving spouse provision that I talked about earlier, telling them that they can obtain relief under 3540, even though they couldn't under Measure 37. So this clarifies the notice procedures and also clarifies what people do and don't have to file in terms of Measure 37 claims. There's also an amendment on the fee provisions so that there is still authority for local government to charge fees for review of Measure 37 claims, the approved and pending claims. There is no longer that authority for DLCD with regard to approved and pending claims.
Mr. Chair, if I may, that again just restores it to current law. We don't currently charge fees, and so what that really amounts to is shifting the cost to the general fund as opposed to a fee-based process. But that was the effect of this. There's another piece in this that is not expressed in these amendments, but I think the anticipated question is worth making clear since there's been some discussion about it. There is nothing in House Bill 3540 that requires that a claim that has been filed be refiled. We're prepared to act on pending claims based on the claim that has been filed, so that when we send notice to claimants who have already filed claims, whether approved or pending, what we will be asking them would be to make a choice between either the express path of relief or whether they intend to pursue the conditional path. We will not be asking them to file a new claim. We will have enough information for most claim review to the extent that their election to their choice to for one path or the other in a specific instance requires information that is not in the claim that they've submitted. We would request additional claims information so that we can process that, but no one will have to refile a claim that's already filed.
Okay. Number 11. Has to do with transferable development rights. There is a provision in Section 11 of House Bill 3540 now that authorizes entities to acquire development rights that are created by Measure 37. This takes that provision and grants, basically uses some existing authority that the legislature granted to local government several sessions ago. And this was for the transfer of development rights sort of pilot project that was done in the Lapine area involving Deschutes County. This would expand that authority to allow transfer of development rights not only within a jurisdiction but also between jurisdictions. Local governments have expressed some interest in doing some pilot projects to do this, and there was a policy decision that that would be a good thing to try as a way of essentially experimenting with transfer of development rights in the Measure 37 context. Okay, the 12th change is a fairly technical change in the definition of high-value farmland. To refresh your memory, if the land involved is high-value farmland, then the owner of that property is restricted to the express lane, the 1-3 category, instead of the 4-10 category under House Bill 3540. There was a concern raised by some irrigation districts that the way we had defined high-value farmland to include land within an irrigation district could create an incentive for property owners to withdraw from an irrigation district in order to get the higher level of development. So that was changed in two respects. One, to say that it had to be within the boundaries of an irrigation district as of sine die, so that we no longer have an incentive for people to withdraw. They're either in or out as of sine die. And then secondly, the property also has to be zoned for exclusive farm use. So if it happens to be in an irrigation district but is zoned for nothing other than farming, it wouldn't be covered. And then the last change here is has to do with the credit that Mr. Chevrolet mentioned, or I think actually it was Senator Przanski who mentioned it, with regard to appraisal cost. This expands the use of that credit to not just the appraisal cost, but other costs associated with preparing the claim. And those are the amendments. Thank you.
Question? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, when you came in at first today, you said that you negotiated these changes. Who did you negotiate with?
There's been negotiations that I wouldn't, maybe I'd use the wrong term, but negotiating. We took input in from a number of people, both inside and outside the building, as to what they reflected when they saw 3540B. It included some of the interest groups outside, such as the Forest Council, Thousand Friends, even comments that you've made, Representative, influenced what we did. So it was not necessarily sitting down on a one-to-one as a traditional negotiations, but as just taking in the input that we heard from many perspectives. Oregonians in Action have made comments. We've taken those comments, and we have also considered those in the changes that we have.
Follow, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Whitman, you talked earlier about giving a percentage of a loss to a claimant. If somebody had a 10% loss in value, you would give them a 10% or 15 or 20 percent waiver. How do you do that?
Chair Devlin, Representative Garrard, the concept is simply that if somebody suffered a loss by enactment of a new land use regulation, that you would give them some additional authorization to use the property that would increase the value of the property by an amount that is equivalent to whatever the loss was, rather than just allowing them uses of the property that would give the property owner a greater value than the loss that they suffered.
Follow? Where would that decision be made? At what level?
Chair Devlin, Representative Garrard, basically it would be made just as it is under Measure 37 right now by the public entity that enacted the land use regulation. Same way that Measure 37 works now.
Follow? Lane, your turn. Have you seen this report from former Governor Attia, former Governor Roberts, and John D. Gray?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I've seen a report, and I'm guessing from the size of it, it's probably the one you're referring to. What's the date on that?
May 29th.
May 29th. I don't know if I have seen that. I have seen that. I think I saw it yesterday.
In that we haven't seen these amendments before, a minute before the committee, this is kind of fair.
Turnabout is fair play.
Yeah, okay. they make an accusation in this document. May I read it to you?
You may.
The proposal, and they're talking about primarily reduction in value, which is always, as the four of us know who have been involved in all this thing, was always a point of contention in our discussions. But it says the proposal does not mention the issue of reduction in value, what it means, and how to calculate it. And now it's making reference to 3540. DLCD's mishandling of these issues, and this is coming from two former governors,
PLC?
Supposedly coming from two former governors.
Supposedly?
Yes.
I'm supposing that your amendments came from you. Do I have any reason to disbelieve that, Senator?
No.
This has their signed names on it. Okay. Anyway, it says, DLCD's mishandling of these issues is the biggest Measure 37 problem, bigger than all the other problems put together. We emphasized this issue in our June 6, 2006 meeting with Governor Kulongoski. He said he was inclined to agree with us while reserving judgment on the waiver issue. Of course, in the nearly 12 months since, DLCD has forged ahead, approving over 3,000 claims, in many cases applying the giveaway the store position described. We believe it is DLCD's handling of Measure 37, more than Measure 37 itself, which is confronting the people of Oregon with the problem of large subdivisions threatening commercial agriculture in the Willamette Valley, something the voters never intended and which the legislature has yet to remedy. Do you have any comment?
Sure, Representative Girard. I've had these conversations not with the former governors, but with Henry Richmond, who represents their viewpoints on this. Their viewpoint has been from the beginning that Measure 37 requires proportionality and requires a specific showing of a reduction in value, so that actually very much closer to what you get in 3540. Our practice, based on advice of the Department of Justice and on the language of the measure, has not been to require a formal appraisal-based reduction in value, establishing a specific loss, and then tying that waiver to the proven reduction in value. We have taken the position based on the measure that if there is a reduction in value demonstrated more likely than not by the facts of the claim, that puts the state and local governments in the position either of paying the compensation or waiving the regulation on which the claim is based, not on a proportional basis. We don't believe that the measure includes in its provisions that element of proportionality. We have interpreted that way. To my knowledge, 36 counties have interpreted it that way. It's been litigated, and our interpretation of the reduction in value has been upheld by the court. Mr. Richmond, but others have challenged our methodology for determining reduction in value and the fact that we don't impose a proportional requirement in the waiver that we give. And we've been upheld so far in our legal challenges on those. So they certainly disagree with us. And I'll tell you that in terms of the direction you're coming from, their methodology would be much more limiting in terms of waivers that people have been receiving than what they have been receiving to date. We believe that House Bill 3540 provides explicit language to, number one, require that reduction in value, and includes that element of proportionality that they believe is already in the measure, and frankly, we have not been able to find it yet. So their take on us is that we have not been tough enough on claimants.
And basically, if I could, Mr. Chair, the position I would assume they would be taking is that 3540 is what their philosophy has been from day one as to what they thought Measure 37 required. But as we would know as legislators, we expect that our agencies are going to follow the direction and the guidance of their attorneys, so we won't find ourselves in litigation and potentially liable for great expenses. So 3540 will actually give us the opportunity to have the perspective of the writer, the author of that memo signed by the governors, to go forward.
Official Senator, you assume a lot.
That's right.
So, but I really do want to underscore that their criticism of the department is that we've not been hard enough on claims.
I understand that. Yeah. Follow. And I would not ever bring up the question as to whether that might have been intentional to create the situation or the adverse publicity toward Measure 37.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Any additional questions? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Just a kind of real-life situation that's going on in my part of the country. The claimant has had his claim approved, so he's under the prior. They have 13 committed folks that want to develop. Where do they sit in that situation?
Get a little more clarification, Senator. You say they've been approved.
The county's approved their claim, the Major 37 claim.
How about the state?
I believe it has. Well, maybe it's just the county. Maybe it has not been by the county. But I don't know which way, ever way it is. And they're thinking they have 13 committed folks. They have potential to do, say, 40. Are they under this three? Or are they under the fast lane, the express lane? And which lane are they in? Or are they even able to do anything with it?
I mean, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I think that would depend on, first of all, are they on high-value farmland, non-high-value farmland?
It's not high-value.
Then the question would be, have they vested, have they not vested? That is, have they gone forward enough with their claim, assuming that they had a state waiver and a local waiver, to establish their common law rights to proceed irrespective of these amendments, in which case then they would not be affected by these amendments. If they had not vested, and if they're not on high-value farmland, they would have the ability to prove up a conditional path claim if they can demonstrate a loss in value up to 10 home sites.
So they would be limited to the 10.
That's correct.
That is okay. Then another question, if I could, Mr. Chair, is that commercial and industrial are still exempt, or not part of the bill. It's only resident. This only applies to residential. Is that correct? And I guess this maybe some thoughts about this. What is the downside if this thing is sent out to an election and it's defeated? Then where are we?
Madam Vice Chair, Senator Nelson, that's one of the reasons that we requested in the legislature passed House Bill 3546, the extension of time. We will continue to process Measure 37 claims at a rate sufficient to move all of the claims through to conclusion about a year from now. So if this measure goes out to the voters, is defeated by the voters, we continue on to ballot Measure 37. Unamended.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I can go back to the previous question that you asked, your clients, your constituents, would actually have the ability to choose one of those three routes as to what they would want. And so if they truly believe that they have the rights that were given to them through their review of Measure 37, and they believe they have vested, they could definitely go forward and not be impacted if the courts agreed that they were, in fact, have vested those rights. And so it's an optional process of where they get to go. Of course, if they wanted to move through without showing valuation, the hybrid that we have with the express lane would allow them to do that, too. So that's their option.
It's still limited to 10 houses. Or 10.
10 with valuation? That's correct.
Anything above 10?
If they vested under Measure 37, yes.
Certainty. It's not a good deal.
Senator, they don't have certainty right now.
Right. In fact, 3540 will give much more certainty because they know that they can choose under the bill one of two routes that's going to give them clear, explicit certainty as to what they're going to get. And more importantly, under 37 right now, what they don't have is transferability. Here, if they actually will get that right, they will, in fact, know that they can take that property, whatever number of developable lots they get, and be able to actually market them.
Just a comment. I got an email from when the first 3540 came. I got an email from an attorney in Redmond, and he gave only about 2 hours to read. He said, I have four issues, and I can probably file a lawsuit under his bill. So, I mean, we have this regardless of this. I think the legislature, we ought to fix this right here in this building.
Mr. Chair, may I speak? Sorry, I thought you'd call on me once, and then we got into a thing, and I'm missing an important thing to myself upstairs. So I just would like to say something, if I could.
Senator Nelson,
sure,
you can conclude.
Thank you.
Representative.
Senator Brzezinski's right. Those folks, if they want to build 40, have to have their own financing currently because no bank will lend to them under the current Measure 37. So you're right. We needed a fix. People who say, don't touch the thing, leave it alone, completely impossible. Will never work for people as is. Has to be fixed. And that's the frustrating part about this, is people who want some things fixed but not other things fixed, it doesn't work that way. It was either written perfectly or it wasn't. And I have never heard anyone say it was written perfectly because of the lack of transferability. So now we have to fix it. And the question is this the right fix or not? I think this is about what people intended. You know, I'm dangerously worried about the effect on agriculture, even with this bill. I'm worried about three houses in every single orchard in Hood River and on all the high-value farmland in Marion County and what that means to the ability to still farm. That's the part that worries me. It's not about having beautiful views. It's about can you farm when there are three neighbors on all sides of your property complaining about all the dust and spray and tractors out in the road making noise in the middle of the morning and they take their acreage out, the co-ops go under. And this is a big deal. And the problem is we got 2 weeks left and we couldn't get an in-house fix. I don't know that most people even want an in-house fix. I think the voters passed this thing. We're going to find out if this is what the voters meant. I mean, we're going to give them a choice. And your question was a good one. What happens if this goes down? We're right back to broken Measure 37 with no transferability, hoping people can afford 40 houses out of their own pocket, which they won't in most cases, and no bank's going to lend to them. You know, I'm partially emotional because I was just upstairs dealing with the former internee bill and getting to see an 80-year-old get to go get her degree, but partially because I take this so this issue is such a personal thing for agriculture. And that's why so many farmers and the Farm Bureau have the position they do in support of this bill, because it is a critical for agriculture that we find some solution. You know, if this isn't it, we'll find that out at the election, and we'll have to get back to work, I guess.
Representative Dinkelder.
Mr. Chair, I move the -B31 amendments to House Bill 3541.
Okay, the amendments...
3540-B30.
Representative Dinkelter has moved the -B31 amendments to House Bill 3540.
It's actually 3540B.
Is there any discussion of the amendments? Objections to the amendments?
No objection.
Okay. Please note for the record that Representative Berlin, Representative Garrard, and Senator Nelson object. Motion passes. Before we go on, I just want to say that this is not in reference to Representative Clam, but I know emotions run high here. It's been my experience in the legislature. I've known Representative Garrard for a long time. I've known Senator Brzezinski for a long time. It is my general belief that it is never actually in anyone's best interest to question the motivation of different parties, whether they be legislators, people that are speaking as witnesses, but just to accept the fact that there are differences of opinions. And I think that both Senator Brzezinski and Representative Garrard both hold very strong opinions on this issue. But I think you can hold very strong opinions and still keep a good degree of civility and respect. Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3540 be tabled.
Okay. It's been moved that House Bill 3540 be tabled. Discussion. Objections? Do a roll call, please.
Representative Clem?
Motion table. Right?
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Dolan?
No.
Representative Dinkfelder?
No.
Senator Avakian?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Devlin?
No. Motion fails.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will move House Bill 3540B as amended with the -31B amendments to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. So Representative Dinkfelter has moved House Bill 3540
B, as amended, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Garrard, then Representative Berwin, and then Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, this is the fourth time in the Ways and Means Committee I've heard this bill. Nowhere in the process has leadership of this legislature allowed the public to comment on a bill that is as controversial and as complicated. Once again, just moments before the committee, we are handed a B-31 amendment, 11 pages, with over 100 lines of deletions and additions to the bill, and expected to vote on it after a brief 25-minute discussion. That is a flawed process, Mr. Chair, and I object to it and will be voting no.
Representative Berwin.
Actually, I can't add anything to what Representative Gore just said.
Senator Nelson, and then Senator Locking.
Senator Monroe and one of our other committees yesterday came in and said, well, you know, the best legislation comes out of this body when you have a bipartisan bill. And the sad thing we do today is this is all going out on party lines, and I feel badly about that. But, you know, he was saying, you know, you've got people on this side of the bill, people on this side, people on this side. But it's really the people in the center that come up with the best situation. And I'm really feeling that that's where we're at with this bill. We have not come to the best decision. I think there was an agreement within the building, and I think it could have been a bipartisan thing. So that's, you know, I can count, so I understand where we're at on this. But I'm just saying this is a comment. I think that there was an agreement within the building, and we just didn't get there, and I think that's a sad day for us as a legislature.
Thank you. Senator Volkin.
I just want to add a different perspective for the record on the process. I know not obviously everybody's happy with the process, but this bill in its specific form and in its general form had months of testimony with hundreds of people from every four corners of the state testifying on how Measure 37 should be changed. Now, not every provision of these amendments that we have before us went through that process. I had the committee right before that committee, and I know those people testified in a more personal sense. I have had hundreds of conversations with people in my district about Measure 37 and what should be done. This building has never had a process where every subsequent committee had to go through a process like the original committee did. It would put the democratic process to a standstill. So, it may not have been a perfect process, and it may not be a perfect bill, but both the process and the bill are both better than inaction, which leaves us with something that cannot be implemented and is not fair to Oregonians. And for that reason, I'll be thankfully to the co-chairs and to everybody who had input in the process voting in favor of the bill.
Representative Plame and then Representative Berwin.
Senator Vakian just shared a lot of what I was going to say, and I thank him for it. I was on the committee, and we did not strictly limit the testimony to the bills in front of us. This bill, it's absolutely true. This bill was not heard in a public hearing. But the issues that are contained in this bill, I sat and listened for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, often to the exact same feelings that people shared as they testified four or five times on every bill we did have, and then our just open public hearings. So is there something we can learn through this bill, about this bill through the public process? We're going to find out, because we've got the ultimate public hearing. It's called an election, and that is what's going to make a decision about this. I do not regret for a moment learning everything we possibly could about every Oregonian who wanted to come down the first 4 months of session and testify. In the end, they're going to get to vote. And I've been getting emails from the people who came to testify in opposition to every bill we've had saying, at least make sure we get to vote on 3540. So we're going to grant that request with the fear that the referral was going to be stripped out so we could solve it in the building. The claimants didn't want it stripped out. They want to vote on this thing. I've got about 20 emails just in the last 2 days to prove it. So I agree we may have been able to do better and get something solved in the building, but we didn't, and time's running out on agriculture, at least. to get an answer to this. And I talked to a land use planner who came to me and said, you know, I do this for a living. I had heard you gutted the bill. I read it. This is actually going to take care of 95% of my clients. They're small claimants who've got two or three houses. They're elderly couples. They're going to get transferability. It's really not a bad bill. And I come at it from, this was him speaking, he's a city councilor here in town. I came at it from thinking, don't touch 37. But the fact is, it's broke, and this is going to help 90% of my people. And, you know, that's not bad. And we'll find out what the people of Oregon say in the big public hearing called an election.
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to go back, you know, back to the earlier comments about how much these things have had hearings, this, B31, has had no public testimony whatsoever. And I hope when this gets to the full Ways and Means, the co-chairs afford the public an opportunity to comment on these amendments.
Thank you. I actually sat in everyone's shoes here, and I don't want to use this as any... I understand how some of the members feel here about the process, and I understand how many of the members feel here about the extensive amount of public testimony that was received. And I don't want to use this as an example that one is not somehow the same as the other, but from the House, I'm a former Rules Committee Vice Chair, and I can remember seeing 40-page amendments come to me one and basically having to act on them in 5 minutes, and that's not the way to do the process. And I don't think that's comparable to what the process is here, because I think all of us have heard from constituents, and we've actually heard from Oregonians that are not constituents. The only bill that I probably have more emails on, not to say anything to the committee, is ATV bills. But with that, I think we've had a good discussion here at the committee. Would you call the roll on the main motion?
Representative Klim.
Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Garrard?
No.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Avakian?
Aye.
Senator Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Schrader will carry to the full committee. Senator Prusansky and Senator Schrader, if he chooses to, will be co-carriers on the Senate. Representative McPherson will be the carrier on the House. And with that, I will close the work session. We will be back Monday for the Oregon Department of Forestry and SB 450, a bill regarding rangelands. That will be